Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 18th, 2011, episode 252, sponsored by Pfizer Animal Health. Good morning, horse people.
Do you know what today is?
No, what?
Yeah!
What day is it? Tell me!
It's Tuesday!
I can't believe it! I just don't believe it!
It's like Tuesday. Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
Beautiful day, yeah, yeah. Beautiful day. It's beautiful. Beautiful day, yeah, yeah. Beautiful day.
Well, I think it's going to be a beautiful day. I hear the weather in Lexington has been absolutely fantastic because there's a big, ginormous horse trial there this weekend, and everybody's excited about it.
Yeah, it's beautiful here. Now, it's supposed to get rain the next couple of days. It'll actually be good. I mean, if it rains and then stops raining for the weekend for this big horse trial coming up, it should be perfect, and they've had great weather for Keeneland this year. It's just been it's been a terrific fall. And I still have tomatoes coming in.
And what?
And I still have tomatoes coming in. Tomatoes right
now. Ah, see, I just planted my tomatoes because you can't plant them here in the middle of the summer because they all get toasted.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. You guys are like on the opposite schedule.
Yeah, I tried to plant tomatoes back in April like normal people do. And have you ever had a nice sun-dried tomato? These were not nice.
You have tomato raisins?
They were just these yellow, burned-looking, nasty things, like, hanging off of the vine. It was disgusting. And so I learned my lesson, and I replanted this fall, and they seem to be doing pretty good right now. So
keep them up. Look at you, the domestic diva.
You know what? My daddy had a garden all my life growing up, and I just think I've got used to good tomatoes. They're my favorite food.
Do you only plant tomatoes? Because we only plant tomatoes. You know, I figure everything else, cucumbers and all that stuff I can buy. And onions never made any freaking sense to me. You plant one to get one. If I have to have more of a yield than that, I am not planting one to get one. I need to plant one to get many. That one-to-one thing doesn't make any sense.
Do you know the only things I plant, just because, and maybe I'm lazy, maybe I just don't care, I plant tomatoes and I have basil plants. So I can take the tomatoes and the basil and I can go buy mozzarella at the store, and then I have caprese salad all the time, super fresh.
You need a cow and then you can do your own mozzarella.
Yeah, that would be a divorce.
You were just whining before the show started about the rooster crowing outside.
Oh, my God, the rooster outside. Not mine. I have neighbors with donkeys, neighbors with roosters and goats and pigs. I mean, everything in this neighborhood, my God. So you hear them all right about feeding time at 6 o'clock in the morning, which is what time it is right now. Sorry.
Are you thinking about converting from vegetarianism and eating chicken soon?
So you mean leaving my vegetarian ways just so I can slaughter the rooster next door? I could just slaughter I'm not eating the gophers I'm killing, so I can just kill without eating, actually.
How politically incorrect can we be in one morning? Jennifer, what's coming up?
On today's Pfizer Tuesday edition, we'll start off the day with an adventure into positive reinforcement problems with our favorite aquatic mammal trainer turned horse trainer, Shauna Koresh, And following a brief layover in the land of interesting horsey headlines, Victoria Spicer is here once again with the European headlines and the Across the Pond video hilarity, compliments of Horse and Country TV.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jennifer. Well, I have a happy birthday to one of our listeners today. Her name is Lindy Von Coding, and she is from Texas. Happy birthday, Lindy. And I have one more quick one as well. Another new name I don't remember seeing, and I apologize if I just don't remember, because that's happening in my old age, but her name is Kayla Mueller, and she posted on our Facebook page yesterday, hey, what is the iPhone app you can get to record your horse's chewing and vet schedules, etc.? Well, that is Pocket Stable, Kayla. It's pocketstable.com, or just search for Pocket Stable on your iPhone in the App Store. And, oh, Jamie, real quick. I think after we heard a review this morning of the iPhone 4S, you want to trade in for it, because the little application in there where you talk to the phone and it talks back and you can schedule appointments, it's like your own little secretary. It's really cool. It's pretty cool.
No way. Oh, I know. I know. I want one.
You have to do it.
Okay. All right. I have two daily winnies.
Okay.
Okay, it's more like an anti-Daily Winnie, because I am so mad. Remember when we did the story, Rick Dutrow, who was the trainer of Big Brown, was suspended. His license was relinquished, supposed to be, for 10 years in New York because of what they called a pattern of license abuses, which was mainly a lot of drug violations with the horses. So he was supposed to give up his license today, or I'm sorry, maybe yesterday. Supposed to give up his license. He got a stay. He got a stay. A judge granted him a stay, so he's got at least 30 more days so they can then schedule their appeal. So the anti-Daily Winnie goes to the judge that he was – Rick Dutrow was given this this slap of a regulation and lost his license for a reason, people. And now they're going to try to figure a way around it, of course, lawyers. Ugh, sorry. And my happy Daily Winnie. Yes, incredibly politically incorrect this morning. I'm a little bit sassy. I need more coffee.
That'll make it worse.
No, I'll be focused.
I think you need some of Rich Dutra's drugs there. Maybe some of those downers.
No, I think he's more into the steroids, so then I would just get more aggressive. So.
No, that's true. Yeah, we don't need that.
No. So I've got a happy Daily Winnie. You know, we followed the saga of Peter Atkins and H.J. Hampton. The horse was owned by somebody else, but he was training it. They were going to be partners, and then she decided she wanted the horse back. And so this woman came and stole Henny out of his barn. Of course, Henny is famous for the Run Henny Run videos with helmet cam videos. So this woman comes into the barn, steals Henny, steals H.J. Hampton. They go to court. He gets the horse back. The horse then colics and has colic surgery through this whole ordeal. And then so he's nursed the horse back to health. And believe it or not, he ran Henny at the Fairhill horse trials this past weekend and included a helmet cam. So I posted it on our Facebook page, the H.J. Hampton Run Henny Run Fairhill CCI 2011 helmet cam. So everybody, please go watch it. It'll make your day. And Colleen Casanova already posted, thank you for sharing this video. I love Henny and Peter, and it's nice to be able to go for a ride while I'm in the office.
Yeah, Henny, he didn't miss a stride, did he? When you watch that, he just didn't miss a stride.
No, he is back in a big way. So I think it's fantastic. And it's so fun to watch and to listen to Peter Atkins. So we were talking this week about trying to figure out what clinician we can have come to our area for the adult riders. And I totally, totally begged for Peter Atkins. Come on, Peter. So maybe they'll pick him.
Did you notice, you know how we talk about skinnies on a cross-country course, and for those that don't know, that means a jump that is very narrow. And they look really skinny when you're walking around the cross-country course, but when you see the helmet cam videos and you see how, in fact, really, really skinny they are when you're on top of the horse going like a bat out of hell, they look even skinnier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like they get skinnier. They just suck right in.
Exactly right. And, you know, it'd be so easy for these horses just to go, I can take one step and don't have to jump that thing at all. It's so skinny, you know?
Exactly. But if you watch Henny go, you'll notice that he doesn't want to not jump anything. All you see are his ears pointed completely forward the entire time. Now, what I am looking for is there was a person this past weekend doing the novice course in my division with a helmet cam on. And I would love to find that helmet cam so I can show everybody what the course looked like that I went and really show my husband because probably nobody else cares. He probably doesn't even care. But I'm going to make him watch this helmet cam video so he sees what my cross-country course looked like. So I've got to find that somewhere. It's got to be somewhere.
Well,
he does a helmet cam and doesn't post it online.
Anyway, yeah, who does that? So I did want to go without mentioning from this past weekend, the sad events that happened out in Las Vegas during the race where Dan Weldon was killed. It was, and everybody's seen the accident, the Indy cars out there. And they're getting so fast now that when they ride up a little bit and get some air under it, they just go 100 feet in the air. And it's becoming so dangerous, and I know they're going to be taking a look at that to find out what they can do about it. But Dan Weldon, who won the Indy 500 this year, as everybody knows by now, was killed. And, I just wanted – we're in a sport, and that's a sport, and I just wanted to acknowledge that and give our best to his family and to the racing community because it was a horrific accident. So, in any case, let's continue on. Speaking of horrific things, I mentioned yesterday, and I want to talk to you today, something we haven't discussed yet on the show, is horse show hotels. Sometimes when you go to a horse show, they're out in the middle of the country, and hotel options are somewhat limited. So you
yes.
end up staying in hotels that you wouldn't normally stay in if you were in a more urban area. And
mm-hmm.
I have a couple of rules about hotels, which Wendy didn't know before she booked the hotel we stayed at this weekend at the carriage auction in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. And the first thing you need to know about Lebanon, Pennsylvania is it's fairly rural, but Lebanon, Pennsylvania, the town of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, is not known for being classy and upbeat. It's rather known for gangs and drugs. So we
Good start.
So she booked the Travel Inn, which I highly don't recommend, in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. And it's right at the edge of town. And as we pull in, I'm going, first of all, I really don't like hotels a whole lot to have outside doors. I used to not mind outside door hotels, but they seem to have gone downhill in the past many years. You know what I'm talking about? The door goes directly into the room from the outside rather than having to walk through the building.
Those are motels.
Well, whatever. Outside door hotels, not so much. So, and then we go in, and, a lot of hotels now are owned by, let's just say so I don't get totally flamed, and I'm not totally politically correct, they're owned by foreign nationals. And I try and avoid those, too. Because
Do the hotels have a curry smell involved?
Maybe. It could have something like that, yeah. So we're trying to avoid those because we just have not had good luck. Maybe you've had better luck and your personal experiences are different. But Jennifer and I have had bad luck in the past. And so we get to this hotel and we check in. Well, first of all, we had paid online with Travelocity. And with Travelocity, you pay them, they pay the hotel. Well, he couldn't quite figure that out. So it took us at least a half an hour to check in after we had to have him redo it two or three times. And then we had two rooms booked, and he only gave us one key, and then we had to go back and get the second key. And it was just this series of nightmares. And there was, let's say, a language barrier there. But we had our paperwork from Travelocity, and we finally convinced them we had already paid. Now, I am also convinced that when we go back and look this week, we're going to see we've been double billed. I'm pretty convinced that's going to happen. So then we go to the hotel and we walk in, and I was surprised. Well, first of all, we had to walk by the drug dealers who were standing by the open doors in the hotel motel to get to our room. So that gives you an indication. Anytime they're standing in the open doors of the rooms, hanging out for hours on end, and then there was this basement-like area, these steps that went down from the sidewalk to something we don't know where they went. We're not quite sure where they went, and we neither one of us was brave enough to go look. So we walk by those and the drug dealers, and then we get into our hotel, our rooms. And I was upstairs, and Wendy was downstairs. So I go upstairs and walk into the room, and it was fairly clean, I have to say, for a 1950s-style hotel room, it was fairly clean. And, you know, sometimes we've slept on top of the covers because you don't want to crawl into the bed. This one, I actually looked at the cover, and I said, I'm better off with the sheets. At least I know they've been cleaned recently. So,
yeah, never actually sleep on top of that because there's all sorts of business that happens on top of one of those that you don't want to be involved in. Just strip it off.
That's part of the story. So the room was relatively clean. I was fairly pleased with that. Went into the bathroom. First of all, you actually can't really go into the bathroom because it was about the size of a porta potty. This is good breakfast talk, but to sit on the toilet, you had to crawl under the sink. So when you were actually sitting on the toilet, literally your head was over the sink. I am not kidding. That's how close the two were. Never quite had that experience before. You could actually brush your teeth.
Did you get a picture of that? Because that would be good entertaining photography right there.
I had nobody to take a picture. So, and the shower looked like it was literally something out of the 1950s. It was very interesting. So anyway, so we get through all of that. First night wasn't too bad. There was a major road right there, and we discovered the train was right behind the hotel and came through about four or five times. So that was all okay. Used to live near a train track, so I could get through that. Second night, we're tired. We've been at the auction from 7 o'clock in the morning. We get in about 10 o'clock that night, get to the hotel, go up to my room, and I think, I'm going to get some sleep, and I had bought some drinks. So they actually had a refrigerator, but it was one of those that they turned off and you had to turn on to use because they leave the door open. So I turned it on, shut the door. Well, I wake up about midnight to this horrendous racket. And, well, the horrendous racket was from the refrigerator just running. So I'm going, what am I going to do about that? So I just turn the refrigerator off and say, the hell with it. I'll have warm drinks in the morning. About 10 minutes later, I get back to sleep. And within another 10 minutes, I hear the woman next door screaming bloody murder at whoever she was in the room with. For 2 hours, she was screaming bloody murder at whoever she was in the room with. And I'm trying to put the pillows over my head. You've done this before. I know you have, Jamie. You put the pillows over your head. So I call the front desk. Nobody answers because the guy ain't down there. The one guy that runs the place, he isn't there anymore. So I'm just trying to sleep and do the best I can. And, you know, I even took Tylenol PM trying to sleep.
Still nothing.
So then I finally get to sleep when they quiet down a bit. And about 10 minutes after I get to sleep again, they decide to have makeup sex. And she was just as loud for that particular activity.
Oh, God.
For about another hour. Well, by now it's 4 in the morning when I'm usually waking up. So I did manage to get to sleep about 4:30 after they were done with that particular ritual. By the way, there's nothing worse than that at a hotel. So I ended up with about 2 hours of sleep that night. Needless to say, I let Wendy know all about it the next day because she is the one that had booked the hotel. So I want to hear, my question of the day is, what horrible horse show hotel stories do you have? And I'll tell you where we found the worst hotels, Jamie, and it just ended now with Fair Hill. Fair Hill, Maryland, has the most god-awful worst hotels you've ever seen in your life. We have had times when we've gone into the hotel room, pulled back the sheet, and there has been bugs, cockroaches, in the sheet of the hotel.
Yeah. I wouldn't sleep there. Oh, that's
slept on the floor. It was just awful. That's awful.
Oh,
so we want to hear your hotel stories. Do you have any hotel stories like that?
I would say that I've gotten better about booking hotels because not that I stay in the fanciest places. There were some interesting places when Chad and I were driving along Route 66. You want to talk about 50s motels? Holy cow. I mean, that is like the entire Route 66 is still in the 50s out here out west. So that's definitely interesting. I would say that I've gotten better because if Wendy would have paid attention, if you go on Travelocity and you look at hotels, and we use booking.com a lot because it's fantastic. You read the review.
What is it? What do you look at? What do you
booking.com.
B-O-O-K-I-N-G? Booking?
Yes. Booking, like booking a hotel room.
Booking.com.
And, yeah, there's fantastic reviews from people, you know, about just about every hotel. So we did our entire European trip on booking.com and booked everything ahead of time. And, you know, you find price points and you get reviews and then you don't have that ridiculousness. But, so I usually look at that pretty good. And now you have an iPhone with you all the time. You can check it out when you're walking into a hotel room and be like, this thing, stay away. I don't so much mind motels. I do strip the sheets off and definitely try to disinfect the remote because apparently the remote in a motel room is the most disgusting part of the entire thing. So between the remote and the top of the bed, and also, don't use any glasses that aren't wrapped in plastic and sealed because apparently sometimes they don't even wash the glasses. They just put the little cap back on them. You know what I mean?
Well, so, I tell you what, I didn't because the water in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, the city water is the most awful tasting water I've ever tasted in my life. Spit it out. It was bad.
Okay. Well, my dad has a rule that he will not stay in a hotel or motel that does not have somebody sitting at the front desk all night long. Like, if you go in there and they're like, hey, we're sleeping, ring the bell, he will not stay there. Simply because of what you're talking about, somebody's fighting and you call the front desk, nobody answers, and then you have to listen to the makeup sex. You know, you want to move your room, you want to have somebody there responsible for things. So that's his rule. He will not stay anywhere else, anywhere that does not have somebody at the front desk all the time, and I think it's a good rule.
Oh, here we go. I just looked up some of the reviews. You want to hear a couple from this hotel?
See, there you go.
As soon as you open the door, the smell hits you. That is true. It's horrible. I even sprayed perfume and body sprays, and it doesn't help. Bathroom was filthy. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, here. And when you sat on the toilet, your knees hit the wall. I stayed there for 3 days, received a service each day. Staff was polite. Oh, that was the owner's son, probably. Hotwire listed it in the two-story category, so booked it based on good experience. Upon arrival, I was totally shocked. It was run-down motel, and it was small and messy, and the room stank. That is true. They did have a smell to it. Oh,
hurry.
He goes on and on and on and on. Oh, here's one good one. There's two words for this room, or for this hotel. Filthy mess. The floor was so sticky, we were afraid to walk on it. Here it is. The bathroom was so small, you could sit on the toilet and put your feet on the tub and wash your hands in the sink all at the same time.
See, always read the reviews. And when people go really crazy, you know, I do. Like when they're like, oh, my God, the breakfast burrito was not as delicious as I thought it would be. You know, like you got to kind of throw stuff like that out. You got to realize that there are crazy people out there. But for the most part, if you read review after review after review, like the ones you're reading right now, don't stay there. Do your homework. Everything is reviewed online. I mean, everything.
Yeah, we would have been. Oh, and I forgot the fire alarm. Did I tell you about that?
No.
Okay, so every morning, or both mornings, when I woke up, I ventured into the teeny-weeny bathroom, crawled around the corner, slid. If you were fat, you weren't getting the shower, by the way. Just forget it. So I slid into the shower as best I could and taking the shower and, you know, banging the elbows on the walls and stuff. And then I get out of the shower. Both frickin' mornings when I get out of the shower, the fire alarm, my fire alarm thing on the wall went off. Beep, 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 beep. Standing there stark naked, soaking wet, and it's going beep, beep. Well, I thought the first morning, I thought, well, you know, maybe it's tied into the other rooms and there really is a fire because at this place, that's a definite possibility. And then I'm going, okay, well, I'm naked, I'm wet, who cares, screw it, I'll let the place burn down around me, I'm getting dressed. So I get dressed, and it's going beep, beep, beep. And then I'm thinking, well, they're going to show up my door, knocking on my door with the fire department here soon. So I thought, well, maybe it was the heat or something from the shower. So I go up and I fan the towel. You know how you fan the towel at your fire alarm when you burn something in the kitchen? Well, that's what I was doing. It finally went off, and I thought, you know, I finally got dressed, peeked outside, couldn't see anything. There were no firemen at my door, and I thought, oh, it's just mine. Next frickin' morning, get out of the shower, and what do I hear? Beep, 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 beep. Fire alarm's going off again. And that was after the two hours of yelling and screaming and the 2 hours of makeup sex, and then take a shower and hit the fire alarm again. It's a very noisy night. Very noisy. Just saying.
Oh,
okay, I'm done.
Seriously, when you were supposed to pay the bill for the hotel, did you take that bill and shove it in Wendy's face and say, you're paying it, you booked it, you're a horrible, horrible person?
Well, let's just put it this way. Wendy is never booking a hotel again. I'm booking a hotel from now on. Wendy is not in charge.
Okay. It's good to know. Good to know.
That's
well,
my story.
The image of you, I mean, you're like 6'10", you know? I mean, the image of you in some cramped shower, naked with the fire alarm going off, I would have paid money for you to run outside going, fire, 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 like soapy and naked running around the parking lot, because then other people would have been able to tell the story about you. This woman would have been like, oh, my God, we fought all night long. We fought all night long, and then we had the best makeup sex ever. I mean, the best makeup sex we've ever had. And then all of a sudden, some naked guy runs out of the shower, comes out of his room yelling, fire, fire. Imagine the stories they could have told. For the good of the other customers. They were sleeping in the same hellhole you were.
I have a special request for all of our listeners all over the world. Please, if you're going to fight with your spouse, do it at home. Save it till you get home. Let's not fight in the hotel room for the neighbors.
No, Glenn, that's where the good drinking happens, is in a hotel room, okay? You got to drive nowhere. So you get your drink on, and that's when the good fighting happens.
And apparently the good makeup sex, too. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if we can say sex. What did we say instead of that?
Well, we can say sex. That's not one of the 7 dirty words.
Okay, we can say. Gotcha.
All right, why don't you do an ad? I'm done
okay.
Now.
Okay. All right, are you finished?
I need a shower. I'll be right back. Just think
about it. We do apologize and want to thank Pfizer Animal Health for being a sponsor of today's show. They are the leading manufacturer of animal health products in North America and in international markets. Pfizer Animal Health's tried and true line of vaccines include West Nile Innovator, the first vaccine to help protect against equine West Nile virus, Innovator combination vaccines, FluVac Innovator, also the vaccine line, and many other quality products. So at Pfizer Animal Health, they are passionate about the health and wellness of horses and all animals. For more information, visit PfizerAnimalHealthProducts.com. That is PfizerAnimalHealth.com.
All right. Thank you. And also, I did notice a press release, Jamie, that Pfizer Animal Health is reintroducing their Quest Plus gel dewormer. Quest Plus apparently had been on back order for some time and unavailable to horse owners and veterinarians. The product is now back on the market just in time for fall deworming to help protect horses against tapeworm as well as other serious internal parasites. And you can learn more about Quest and Quest Plus. You visit QuestHorse.com. QuestHorse.com. And I know we just gave Beaker some of that for the fall. So Quest Plus is back. They must have been having production issues or something.
Well, I know that they're having issues with not them, but just not having any new dewormers in the pipeline, you know. So that's why they're saying, you know, before you gave Beaker his dewormer, I'm sure you did a fecal sample, right, and you took it into the vet clinic just to make sure?
And he was probably.
Of course.
He was positive, Jen?
Yep.
Bummer. He's a shedder.
He's a fat shedder. See, that's
he's
a mess.
You,
though. Just because your horse is fat doesn't mean he doesn't have any worms.
You know, that is so Beaker. He can fight through the worms in his belly and still gain weight.
That's right. Just the quantity of intake makes up for it.
You didn't even tell me he was. I didn't hear he was positive.
Well, I didn't want to freak you out. You'd freak out.
Yeah, probably would.
Whatever, Glenn ingested worms in that hotel, so he needs he needs Quest Plus as well.
I did not bring my dinner back to the hotel. Let's say that. That did not happen.
That, you put stuff in the fridge. So the website for Quest Plus is questhorse.com. And Glenn, I don't know if they have a questhuman.com, but I would probably check on that.
All right, let's get to our first guest. Shauna Koresh is a regular here on Horses in the Morning, and we know that some of you would like to talk to some of our guests sometimes. If you have a question for Shauna, she'll be here for the next 20 minutes or so. You can give us a call at 347-637-3238. That's 347-637-328 if you have any questions for Shauna. And, of course, Shauna is on Target Training, and Jennifer always leads the way with Shauna. So I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer.
Take it away, Jennifer. Good morning, Shauna.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing just great. You've got your non-caffeinated favorite morning beverage with you?
Yes, I do.
Because you're a non-caffeine gal.
I am a non-caffeine gal.
And good thing, because if you were caffeinated, I just can't imagine.
I'm in the minority, that's for sure.
So what sparked today's topic is I actually got a suggestion from a listener on the Horse Tip Daily Facebook page, and I thought, well, we'll get your point of view as well as a few other trainers as we go along here in the next couple of weeks or so. She wanted to know what was going wrong because her horse would not respect her personal space, just inner space all the time. And folks who do positive reinforcement type training that involves a food reward or a tactile reward, you scratch their withers or something, often come across this problem where the horse just wants the reward. He says, well, it's just right there. If I get close enough, eventually you're going to figure it out. You're going to give me my reward. And I wanted to talk to you today about what is it that we as mediocre trainers are doing to create that behavior pattern. And I must say, I do have personal experience there.
Well, you know, it is a common problem. I mean, and this is just an axiom to keep in mind throughout everything you do. This is just the way that behavior principles work. If any behavior increases in frequency, it is getting reinforced by something. They're either getting something they want or avoiding something they don't want. That's just how it is all the time. So that means those horses that are encroaching on people's space are getting something they want. And sometimes I got to tell you, sometimes it has nothing to do with the positive reinforcement being that we're a primary reinforcement, something they need to survive, they're seeking, like food. But sometimes it's just interaction. You know, like young horses would just as soon you fuss with them and push them away or tell them no or swing at them. You know, that's kind of a part of a game for them. And so that in itself may be very reinforcing for some horses. So in that situation, the very best thing you can do is ignore the behavior and step away so that they can't be in your space anymore. So you're taking away that interaction, that game playing that, you know, that they may be seeking or wanting from you. Mm-hmm. So that's addressing it from one side. And it kind of depends on what their motivation is. And the only way to figure that out is by changing something you're doing and seeing if it works. And if something has worked for a while, It actually, and you take away the reinforcer, whether it's the interaction or whether it's the food, they may try a little harder before they quit and give up. That's just another behavior principle.
Yeah. That's like the little kid that you won't let him buy the candy bar at the grocery store, so if screaming doesn't work, then holding his breath and turning blue will.
Exactly. It's right. It when you take away the reinforcement, whatever it is, it elevates before they quit, before they have what they call, technically it's called extinction burst. So they get higher and higher and higher. And so that's one thing. So if you have a horse who's pushy and you think it's an interaction thing, and that's a lot of times the stallion-y horses and the baby horses are the ones I see it the most with. So step away and then only step back in when they're nice and quiet. And then, so there's that side of it. But let's talk about the positive reinforcement side, because that's really where I hear it the most, and I have a real direct way to do that. And this side of it is they are getting something they want. They think that they're getting the food reinforcement if you're utilizing food as a reinforcement. And this comes because they oftentimes have a history of, you know, how do they get their food? They go and they push and they eat it. You know, I mean, they use their lips, their mouth, they push, they go to the grain bucket, they go to the grass. It's an instinct for them to put their nose where the food is. Mm-hmm. So that is the very first lesson. When you're going to do positive reinforcement training, clicker training, on-target training, the very first thing I do, I address this, because you come into the stall or their paddock or whatever and you have something with food. I use like a side bucket, and they come over and they think, oh, there's food in there. I want that food. How can I get that food? I'm going to do what has always worked to get that food. And so you have to teach them a new pattern, a new behavior, a new way of seeking food, and that is to turn their head away. And so it's really, really important. That's the very first thing I do. And so I just hold my hand over my bucket until at some point they give up and look away. And if they get a little mouthy, I'll kind of flick their little noses a little bit, you know, if I feel like they're kind of getting bitey. And inevitably they turn away. As soon as they turn away, I click and feed. And so usually within about 45 seconds, they start realizing, wait a second, this mouthiness doesn't work, but keeping my head over here does work. This is what I'm going to do then, because this is what gets me the reinforcement. Bottom line, they just want the reinforcement. And I mean, and soon that reinforcement is just our presence, and that is because it becomes conditioned through basically Pavlovian conditioning, where it just they associate you with reinforcement of any variety. So they see you and get excitement. They forget why it is. But so initially, that is how I teach them to do that. But with a lot of people, they may do it during just a training session, but they don't maintain it when it's time for grooming, or they do it here, but they don't. So I think it's really important that you just address it. And if you can still walk away if you like. But teaching them through the positive reinforcement is good. Walking away is also good if you're in an environment where you can. But I found that a lot of times what we think is correction, you know, as we go and kind of get after them and shoo them away, a lot of times more often than not, I found that in itself is a reinforcer. You know, they would just as soon have that.
Playing chase with a friend and like, ooh, that's fun. Play tag.
Yeah, exactly. And like young horses, they when they're young, I mean, part of any young animal's playing is learning how to deal with later on in life how to interact socially, you know, so they're honing skills of how to find their place in a herd, how to spar with the other males, how to, you know, get the females, whatever it is, or ward off the males. It's all a practice thing. So they want to interact and they want to engage in that kind of play. That's kind of an instinct in them. So a lot of times the young horses would just as soon bandy about and swing at them because it's all kind of fun for them. You know, it's part of their growing up. So that's and then sometimes that can carry over to adulthood if that's worked through their youth. You know, then they grow up and think, "Ooh,
there's a lot of horses out there that have what I call arrested emotional development. They stay in that oral fixated playful mindset their whole life. They're mouthy their whole life. They just love to chew on stuff and play and interact and play mouth tag and all that kind of thing. Particularly you see it with the geldings. So that type of horse especially would be prone to developing the crowd you behavior pattern because you want to judge him away. And in fact, what he's figured out is if I go over and crowd you, I'm either going to get a food reward, which I think is really cool, or I get interaction reward, which is just as cool for me. So I guess the hard part there is I guess it's a little bit like when you train dogs, if you kind of fold your arms and just turn away from them so that they see, say, so they, you're kind of a fence post standing there. There's, okay, there's just nothing going to happen here, dude. To try and do that rather than judge them away or push them or interact them with them in any way, that's going to be tough because your first reaction for most people is to do that. You're going to shove them away. You're going to smack their shoulder. You're going to do something. That's going to be a training process for the human.
That is the toughest part of it. You know, and I think that, and there's also a, kind of a part of us that's trying to defend ourselves. We get a little worried about, you know, don't. This is encroaching on my space. It's a little annoying, and you may actually can hurt me if I'm not careful. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's also important to recognize if it's escalating, you definitely need to step away. But, you know, because sometimes just turning away from them, near them, will work, and they think, huh. But sometimes stepping away, I break eye contact, and I look away. Or if, like, a horse is pawing in the cross ties, you know, I won't come up to the horse pawing in the cross ties until they stop. You know, and so that is, it's the same principle, the same things are behind the motivation there, that they're wanting to be with you, they want you there, or they want the attention. They don't want to be left alone in the cross ties or just standing there. So, yeah, you're right. The toughest part is the human. And then the other thing that you can also do to also step this up and make this is better or make their behavior better is actually to reinforce when they're good. And I think that's really hard because we have a tendency to take the good behavior for granted and not notice it. We have a tendency to notice and react and give attention when things start to go, you know, when the dog starts barking, the horse that starts pushing, the horse that starts pawing, here we come running over to correct it. So we have a tendency to draw attention to the wrong things. So as much as possible, if you can train yourself to stop and go, you know what, you're being good right now, I will give you a reinforcement, whether it is, you know, scratching them or is giving them a food reinforcement. And people really kind of forget that food is the very strongest, the most bestest reinforcement that there is. And it's because it is ingrained in them. It is so strong. Their desire for food is so strong. The trick is, how do you turn that into something that's constructive as opposed to that in your space crowding kind of thing? So you can utilize the food reinforcement. Just beware what they're doing when you offer that food reinforcement, because that's the behavior reinforcing. As soon as you go to get it, they're like, ooh, remember that. That's what I'm doing. So I think that that's a really valuable tool in our training, but it's learning how to do it correctly to get the right behavior and to change their, you know, their thinking of wanting to go to you and crowd you. And another thing I do, too, is in the very beginning, like I said, when I first introduced this as a training method and say, okay, we got a new tool that we're going to use, and you're going to love it, and it's going to change, you know, your life. You are going to love everything I do. But there is the very first rule is turning their head away. And so as they get that worked out, then I take that to outside their stall. So next it's leading with your head, you know, correctly forward or even slightly away.
That's excellent.
So they start learning that this applies in everything, not just when I'm standing in my stall or my paddock and you come in here and I just turn it away like, this is what I do, this is my behavior, but instead say, no, now when we walk, you need to keep your head away. Now we're in the cross ties, you need to keep your head away. So I actually do those as training sessions so they understand there is a criteria that's being established. And the more you get the chance to reinforce it, the more likely you are to see it. That's just how another behavior principle. So the more you do it, the more they're going to rehearse this or practice this behavior in all situations. So and pretty soon they just are good. You know, they just stand. It's a habit. Like I stand in the cross ties and I'm good. You know, and that's their new behavior, their new habit. So it's just you have to kind of teach it though, so they learn that, and then you can start to fade out whatever reinforcements you're using, and the time can go longer and longer and longer and longer. So I still keep, like, carrots in my grooming bucket, let's say, and but I only pull them out when I decide they're right. They're on hand. I can use them once or twice or whatever I want to do. But in the very beginning, you actually kind of have to make it a training session, kind of teach them this new criteria. Let's form this new habit.
Yeah. So let me see if I can get – I'm going to get this right, because my horse in particular does have treat radar. He is – he's the most food-motivated horse I've ever owned, that's for sure. But my inclination would be when my horse is having a bad day to not give him any treats.
Uh-huh.
He's being bad. My inclination would be when he's being good to give him lots of treats because he's standing there on the cross ties.
Yes.
But unless I'm actually asking for specific behaviors, just shoving a treat in his mouth because he's, quote, being good can eventually lead to these habits, because he's not associating that treat with a behavior. He's just associating the treat with the fact that I am nearby with a grooming box.
Yeah. And that's
so
really
I've inadvertently taught him grooming box and human arrive, treat arrives with it.
Right. And that's, you know, and that's where I think it's people to use food to use treats. Okay, because when I think of food as a reinforcement, I think there's a systematic approach here, you know. But if you're just going to give treats, it can be kind of detrimental unless you're understanding what you're reinforcing. I see people just reinforce random stuff that's not really going to be desirable.
Oh, look, he put his ears up. Give him a carrot. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and it's unintentional. The horse isn't putting together that I've done something. And so through the training that with the positive reinforcement training, the clicker training, the on-target training, is I do use a signal that says, yes, what you're doing right now is correct. And it's called the bridge signal. This is getting a little technical, because it bridges the moment they do the right behavior to the moment in which you can give them the food. So it serves as a bookmark saying, I like what you're doing right now. And so then you can go get the food, and they remember that you're reinforcing that behavior, because that's when you gave them the clue. You just earned a reinforcement. And so they remember that moment in time, and that's what you see repeated. So oftentimes when when people may go to go to get the carrot of the grooming box, by then the horse is turning and showing angst. So that's what they're making the association with. But when you use a reinforcement, and I use a verbal reinforcement a lot, especially with doing something like grooming, where I just, you know, you're just doing something normal, and I use the word okay, and I've conditioned it and built it up with the reinforcement. But I have a way that I can say, okay, right now is good, and then I can go get the reinforcement, and they realize that's when they're standing with their head relaxed and their head forward, kind of, you know, just being a quiet horse, as opposed to the horse who gets, you know, pushy or mouthy or is too trying. You know, I try to reinforce them for that relaxation, and their mental attitude is as much a part of this process as anything. So I want it to be when they're relaxed, head forward, not trying to be pushing on me, and that's the behavior they'll repeat. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. So my takeaway is, just like any other school of training that is successful in the long term, you got to be training the human as much as you train the horse, because if the human doesn't get his part of the equation right, the horse can't. So we've got to train ourselves to reward the positive behaviors and don't just focus on the negative ones. And also we need to be consistent in that if a behavior is positive and desired, it's always positive and desired. So if I say, put your head up, and you put your head up, and it's a good behavior, you always do it. It's just consistency and making sure the human gets their part of the equation, just like any other training technique that horse folks talk about.
Mm-hmm. And that's right, that's exactly it. And it, you build up the time longer and longer and longer. But that is really the crux of it. And just to remember that if they're doing it, they're getting something out of it. So sometimes you just have to step back and think, now what might it be in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's
awesome.
Does that
how
help?
Useful.
Yeah, it really, really, really is. I mean, and also I think it's important to point out, I've used food reinforcement to cure mouthiness and biting. So, you know, the food can stop this behavior as much as it can create the behavior. It's just the human has to kind of shift their thinking.
So where are folks going to go to see lots of really cool videos, lots of really cool blog posts from Shauna Koresh on problems like this and others that people want to solve? What's your website?
Go to askshauna.com. I think that's the easiest to find. And that takes you to a landing page where you can post questions, but it takes you into the website. So from there, if you navigate to the blog particularly, I answer a lot of questions. I put up video posts, and it's all about addressing various, you know, topics of And a lot of times they're issues and sometimes they're philosophies, but
love
that's
the blog
a lot. There's
posts,
a lot of information there.
Love the blog posts.
Oh, good. Thank you.
So everybody head on over to askshauna.com, see what she's up to over there, and if you have a question, a problem, a query that you would love Shauna to chat about on the Horses in the Morning show, you can pop over there to askshauna.com, or you can email us over here at Horses in the Morning at jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. And thanks, Shauna, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. It's been fun. Have a great one.
And good job, Jennifer. Well done. I think now we're going to play a little bit of a song. And Glenn, I know you downloaded the song for me. Because it is Jared Rodgerson, and I am a huge Jared Rodgerson fan. So here it is. Glenn, you there?
I'm here. Yep.
Make sure you're still with us here.
I'm still with you.
All right. Well, everybody, it's Honky Tonk Halos, JaredRodgerson.com.
Time and strangers keep passing you by. Don't you know there's a place you can go to? Heaven's just beneath the Wyoming sky. And there's honky-tonk halos hanging on cowgirl angels, storm clouds dancing on the open sky. Dusty roads that lead down to blue water, it just might change that broke down look in your eyes. You've been beat down, busted and broken, you've fallen on some real hard days. If you listen to the words I have spoken, won't even have to pass away. There's honky tonk halos hanging on cowgirl angels, storm clouds dancing on the open sky. Dusty roads that lead you down to blue water, it just might change that broke down look in your eyes. Came on home. The honky
honky tonk halos hanging on cowgirl angels. Storm clouds dancing on the open sky. Dusty roads that lead you down to blue water. It just might change that broke down look in your eyes. Honky tonk halos hanging on cowgirl angels. Storm clouds dancing on the open sky. Dusty roads that lead you down to blue water. It just might change that broke down look in your eyes.
Honky Tonk Halos, Jared Rogerson. Go to jaredrogerson.com. You can also find his music on cdbaby.com. And why wouldn't you want to download that? I mean, first of all, it's a great song. And number two, he's adorable. So that's jaredrogerson.com. Go check out him at that website. So today's show is brought to you by Pfizer Animal Health. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. And as usual, this time of week, we have our friend Victoria. Victoria Spicer is the senior web editor of Horse and Country TV, and we get her on to chit-chat about what's going on overseas. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning. How are you both?
I say good morning. What time is it there, actually?
It's nearly 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh. You don't have to say good morning back. It's okay.
It would just sound It would sound quite strange if I said good afternoon in return.
Well, we're clear that you're over there, and I thought it was about 9 hours difference, so close. But tell us what is happening over there in Europe. I know that we had Poe this past weekend, the big 4-star, and William Fox Pitt was the winner, but somebody else won the prize money.
Well, basically, Poe was the final leg of the HSBC SEI Classics, and it came down to the wire. And if William Fox Pitt had won the event and Mary King had finished outside the top eight, then William would have claimed the $150,000 prize for winning the Classics series. And as we went into the show jumping on the last day, William was in second, and he had two of his other rides were all in the top, I think it was in the top 10 as well, whereas Mary was in 11th place. And so it was quite nerve-wracking going into the final day. And it turned out the show jumping was really influential. Hardly anybody jumped clear. And both William and Mary did jump clear. But it meant that Mary moved up to fourth, William won, but Mary King still won the $150,000 prize. So a double celebration, I think, for both of them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, here, I know you didn't win, but here's a check for $150,000. And William Fox Pitt, you won, so here's a big check for you. So
yeah, exactly.
And good weekend for both of them.
Definitely. And what was really interesting about William was that he was riding, he had three horses there, which is quite a lot to fit into 1 3-day event. And the two that he finished first and third on were both 8-year-olds. So it was quite a remarkable achievement for William as well.
That's phenomenal. First of all, to have 1 4-star horse, much less have 3 in 1 competition and finish first and third. I mean, between William Fox Pitt and Mary King, y'all are going to carry the eventing torch for quite some time. So
I hope so.
I have a lot of horses going over there and some pretty talented people. So now tell everybody, for those of us who don't know over here, explain to everybody who Frankel is and what is Frankel's importance.
Well, Frankel, as I mentioned last week, is a racehorse who's just been phenomenally successful. He's 3 years old, and he won the 2,000 guineas. And not only did he win it, he just tore away from the field and left them all trailing in his wake. I think he finished about 6 or 7 lengths clear. So that was back in the end of April. And ever since then, he's been the horse on everybody's lips. And, you know, everybody said, can he ever be beaten? has there been a horse as good as him in recent years? And so on Saturday, there was a big race day at Royal Ascot called British Champions Day, which was the first time it's ever been held at Ascot, and it had £3 million of prize money up for grabs. And Frankel was on the race card, and he did it again. He sauntered home in the lead, and everybody was just absolutely delighted.
Oh, it sounds like... So what's his record right now?
I think he's raced 8 times, and he's... it's 9 times, and he has never been beaten. So it's just, he's incredible. And nobody's just seen a talent like him in recent years. And we're just wondering if he could be one of the best horses ever in British racing. So it's a hugely exciting time. And the atmosphere at Ascot was just incredible. And as soon as one race had finished and it was time for Frankel to parade, myself and my colleague from Horse and Hound, we went down to the parade ring to watch him, and we couldn't get near. We had to elbow people out of the way, and it was like a rock star was turning up, and the minute he walked into the parade ring, people started cheering and clapping. And when he won, just the atmosphere was electric. It was just so good to be there, and very exciting for anyone who's keen on their racing.
Oh, wow, that is... That's like watching, I remember when Glenn went to go meet Zenyatta, she was doing an appearance at Keeneland, and apparently like thousands of people showed up. It was 23 degrees outside, and they waited for hours just to get a glimpse of this mare being led around, and that's exactly what it sounds like. I know there was some elbows thrown, right, Glenn?
Yeah, it was freezing cold. It was like midnight. And there were thousands. They were standing 6 or 7 deep around there. She came in for 10 minutes and left. It was a fun 10 minutes while everybody was there.
On
this note, I was on your website and on your article link you gave us, and we'll post a link to that. Jennifer can post a link to that on our Facebook page. There's an excellent video about Frankel. For those of us over here in the United States who haven't followed him, there's an excellent video on there, and it is exciting.
It definitely is, and it's so nice to have a flat racehorse having that kind of appeal to the public, because often they come along for a season or two and they hit all the headlines and then they disappear off to stud and we don't hear much about them again. So apparently Frankel is staying in training as a 4-year-old, and I can't wait to see what he does next season.
Gosh, that sounds so familiar. I mean, just to let you know, like Zenyatta, my favorite mare, she was, 19-0, and she still has a blog. She has a Facebook page. You can still follow her, even though she's in foal. She talks about, somebody talks about her, being in foal, and I hope that they keep that up with Frankel for you guys, because, when you get so excited about a horse and you follow them and you're so passionate about them and then they retire and disappear, it's very disappointing. And you just have to, wait on the sidelines for a baby to appear somewhere. So very cool that you guys have that, and I hope they definitely keep the horse in the spotlight for you and y'all get a flat racer to get excited about. But I think there's some controversy in flat racing over there too, isn't there?
Yes, we've heard all week. We've been hearing lots and lots about the whip rules. I think we had a chat a couple of weeks ago about these new rules, which were limiting the amount of times jockeys could use the whips. And there's just been a number of high-profile jockeys receiving bans. And actually, last Thursday, I went to a local race course for a quiet night of racing. There weren't many people there. And one of the best-known jockeys in the country, who's called Richard Hughes, he received a whip ban, and it was his second one in a week. And he relinquished his riding license there and then and refused to ride his 2 remaining rides for that evening. And he's refusing to come back into racing until the whip rules have been reviewed. So controversial times, which is a shame considering the greatness of Frankel and his brilliant performance. And it has been a little bit overshadowed by nonstop talk about the whip debate.
I heard that I've read a couple places that they're talking about the jockeys maybe even going on strike. Is that just rumor?
There was rumors that it was going to happen on last Monday, and it turned out it didn't happen. The British Horse Racing Authority, who are the governing body of racing, they agreed to have talks with racing's representatives to see what could be decided. And yesterday, I think a number of very big name jockeys went to the British Horse Racing Authority, and they had a meeting, and we waited all yesterday to find out what was going to happen. And they finally, at 7 o'clock in the evening, they said that nothing was going to be announced until Friday. So a tense few days in racing.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you've got horses, you've got Frankel running, you've got all sorts of races coming up. And then, I mean, imagine, Glenn, if you went to Keeneland on Thursday, like you're planning to go, you go to Keeneland and, yeah, there's no jockeys. That's not going to have a jockey. I wonder if they would bring in, like, hey, anybody out there want to ride this number 7? You could just volunteer, Glenn. Yeah, I'm 6'9". I can hop on. No problem.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, I'm a bit tall to be a jockey, but I'm quite tempted to go on a bit of a crash diet and see if I can pick up any spare rides if this amount of bans continues.
Well, you would just have to do it for your country, wouldn't you, Victoria? I mean, my God.
I think I might struggle because I've done quite a lot of dressage growing up, and I think I'd struggle to ride as short as the jockeys do. But I'll give it a go.
That and, you know, you're supposed to lean forward, not sit up straight.
Yes.
Big difference there.
Absolutely.
Well, we'll see what happens with that. I mean, that'd be interesting. You know, they did that movie about baseball here where the baseball teams went on strike and all the women took over. I mean, that'd be cool if there was, like, you know, the second string of, I'm trying to think of the football movie that they did that too. I mean, can you imagine second string jockeys? That'd be awesome. Anyway, you guys also, we talked a little bit ago, Victoria, about a new show that you guys are going to have where show jumping is in 3D. How is that coming?
Oh, well, we were at Horse of the Year show last week, and we're not actually showing 3D television programs ourselves, but Sky Sports, who are the main sporting people who provide sporting coverage in Britain, they trialed 3D show jumping for the first time at Horse of the Year show. And so we had the quite amusing thing of going into the riders' lounge and seeing a number of Olympic riders sitting there with 3D glasses on watching the sport. And it actually worked really well. I think, you know, it might not catch on immediately because you have to have a 3D television and not everybody has the glasses lying around. But what it did do was give a sense of scale of just how big these fences are and how wide. And I think when you go back to watching it in 2D, you do notice the difference. And I think that's quite exciting. And it does work quite well with equestrian sports.
So were the riders are sitting there watching themselves go 3D?
They're watching their rivals. We would go in and there would be about 6 men sitting there with their sunglasses on watching these 3D televisions, and they seem to quite like it. So it's maybe something in the future. Every show jumping event will be covered in 3D.
Well, I mean, and hey, you want to talk about ringside chatter. You know, you're already sitting outside the ring and you hear all the competitors like, oh, my God. He is just pulling on that horse. He needs his outside leg back. He's not riding that correctly. Look how unbalanced he is. Imagine how intense that's going to be if everybody's in 3D. Oh, my God, look at his hands. That's horrible.
Absolutely. 3D in high definition, there's no escape anymore. The slightest mistake and you'll be caught out.
Oh, without a doubt. That could get ugly. That could get ugly. So, before we let you go, we had talked the most awesome video of a camel doing upper level Grand Prix dressage was last week. And what do you have for me on the entertainment side this week?
This week we dug out an old video from the archives, and all our Facebook fans are liking it furiously. I think I put it up this morning and we've had 133 people like it. And it's a pair of British comedians called French and Saunders. And if any of you American listeners want to see what having a horse and pony was like back in the 80s, you should watch this film. It's absolutely great. These two trying to persuade their reluctant ponies to jump a course of homemade fences, and in the end they just have to resort to jumping them on foot. So it's very funny, and it's worth a watch if you want to see what it was like back in the day.
I saw this a little while back, and then I watched it again this morning after you posted it, and it is hilarious. These two are, first of all, French and Saunders, they're just, they do all kinds of different things. It's the only video they did. But it is hilarious. It is, and you can so relate.
Absolutely. It brings back lots of memories, and I especially like her wearing her hairnet and just to go riding in a muddy field, and also when she's sitting on the pony and he is refusing to stop eating grass, and she's giving some commentary of her ride, her round at that.
This is the one where she's on him, and she's kind of chubby, and she's kicking her pony, and she's like, come on, Peter Pan,
It is brilliant. And it's worth bearing in mind that Jennifer Saunders, who is the one, I think, the one who's riding Peter Pan, she is actually a keen equestrian. And I work at Hickstead, which is a big show jumping competition that we have over here in the summer. And Jennifer Saunders came down to Hickstead this year and was found lurking at the top of the Hickstead bank, saying it was terrifying and she'd never ride down it. So I don't know whether she was interested in horses before she did this comedy sketch, but it seems to be a lasting interest for her.
Oh my gosh, it's like one of the funniest things. Okay, can we post that link on Facebook? Because even if you've seen it, you have to watch it again, because this is what every little girl does. Like, I just remember getting dropped off at the barn for the week, you know, for like Saturday morning, and being basically left there for the entire weekend with my horsey friends. And this is exactly what we would do. You go and you have big plans. You go to set up the jumps. You end up jumping them yourself. You can't catch your horse. If you do catch them, they either run away like one of the horses, or they won't stop eating grass. I mean, it's like grabs every aspect of a girl horse weekend all in
Absolutely. One
little sketch. So thank you for reminding me about that. That's too funny. But we'll put that on our page as well, because it is definitely an entertaining one. And Victoria, thank you so much for being on with us. I just sent you a Facebook friend request, so we can totally be friends. and everybody, please go check out horseandcountry.tv for these videos and many, many more. We appreciate you being on.
Thank you very much.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Brilliant. Have a good week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you to Victoria. And good job, Jamie. Good job. I love that video. That was so funny.
Gosh.
It just, you're right. It does capture almost everything. It just captures it all. It is it's brilliantly written.
I wonder
the English
if we
know
can
how
play
to do comedy.
I wonder if we can play it tomorrow. For those
I don't know that the sound itself, you have to see this video. I don't think the sound's gonna do it itself. It's just, you just have to see it. Hey, what else did I see you post on Facebook that you're now that you like Colonel John's First Recruit from Windstar Farm? What did I see about that?
Oh, yeah, I did just kind of post that on my page. remember several weeks ago, Windstar Farm, gosh, it seems like forever ago, showed they have a stallion that stands named Colonel John, and he stands there, and they took photos of all of his first crop. And they put a photo of each of the foals online, and everybody got to go and vote for their favorite foal in the picture. And there's some phenomenal looking babies that have come out. So you can go online and cast your vote. They've narrowed it down to the top four. So why don't we post that link on Facebook right now, and everybody can go check it out. But if you're not on the Facebook right now, it's Win, WinStarFarm, Windstar Farm. And you should be able to see it's called Colonel John Recruits. And you get to go vote on the best baby. And they will be honored as a top recruit, because it's Colonel John, top recruit of the 2011 class. And the owner of the baby is going to win first prize. I don't know what that prize wins. And I don't know what the point of voting is, really, for what the benefit of it is for us. However, you get to go look at some cute babies.
I voted for number 11. I thought he was the cutest.
Is that the one jumping the dog?
That's the one jumping the dog. I mean, he skipped the racing part. Just send him right to eventing. Just have Boyd take him over and send them right to Aventing. Skip racing.
Exactly. But Tia, you voted for the Aventer. Now the one in the front is stretched out galloping, and then the next baby they've got standing perfect, and its confirmation is to die for. I mean, it is such a well-put-together foal. So, you know, personal preferences, and then the last one is just a cute, fuzzy baby. So WinStarFarm.com, W-I-N, WinStarFarm.com/ColonelJohnRecruits, or you can just go to their homepage and check it out there, or our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning, and cast your vote, and then Facebook will tell on you. So if you're supposed to be working, do it after work. Because
that's
when
right.
You click like, it links to your Facebook page and says that you just posted this.
Hey, I was speaking of eventing this weekend, the Haggard Mid-South three-day event and team challenge is at the Kentucky Horse Park. It's a big event here in the South. And I, you know, we wonder about the economy sometimes, but apparently it's not hurting the eventers because the organizers opened over 600 entries for both the horse trials team competitions and the three-day event divisions. There's 600 entries this weekend at the Horse Park. It's a record for them, and they are full. They have a waiting list now. One of the cool things about this particular weekend is they have 50 that are going to compete in the classic format. And if you remember right, Eventing used to have the roads and tracks, and the everything happened before Cross Country Day. It was a much longer event than it is now. Well, they're going to be offering that particular division this weekend. And there are 50 that have signed up for the longer division. So that's kind of cool. And it also, there's a CCI One Star, and it hosts four national championships. And that's the National Junior Championship, the 19 to 21-year-old championship, the National Amateur Championship, and the National One Star Championship. All will be held this weekend at the Kentucky Horse Park. Jennifer and I are hoping to head out of there Saturday and watch a little cross country.
Well, good deal. I do miss riding in Kentucky, but so beautiful there. However, I was supposed to ride in California in a couple weeks, and I'm having like an emotional, I guess, trying to decide what to do. Let me get your opinion. Let me tell you what I'm supposed to do and what I have to do. Actually, I don't have to do anything. It's still up for discussion, but today is the deadline to enter the Galway Downs horse trial, which is in California, in 2 weeks. Okay, so the horse trial, let me look at the calendar here, is November 4th, 5th, and 6th. Okay, first week. So I can do that.
Okay. Right.
Because, you know, follow up, I got to get, you know, get my horse's brain right, keep him going. He's got another horse trial. It's the last one of the season. The next one don't start till February and March. So there's that horse trial going on. And then the decision comes between that and flying to San Francisco for Chad's grandmother's 90th birthday. What do I do?
So they're both the same time, of course?
Same weekend.
Ooh,
and Chad doesn't care what I do, but I'm like a new wife. Shouldn't I, like, for the family, show up? I call my mom and ask her, and, of course, she's like, get your butt on a plane and go to San Francisco and see his grandparents. What do I do?
You know, See, I don't know, Jennifer. I'm going to defer to Jennifer. Jennifer, what would you do? I know what Jennifer would do.
Thanks. Throw me under the bus. You know, I know what I would do. This is the scenario. If this was in Glenn and Jennifer's house, this is how it would play out.
I would be going to the party,
birthday,
and Jennifer would be going to the horse show. That's how it'd play out.
Look, Granny's birthday is the same weekend. Oh, sorry. Already entered the horse trial.
See, I told you.
And then Glenn would give me crap about not going to Granny's birthday. Glenn is the conscience in this home when it comes to family events.
Okay,
and
let's
then
ask
she would
her.
Book,
let's
and
ask
then
her
I'd
Facebook
be booked in a crappy hotel, and she would be having a great time at the horse show. There you go. That's what happens. There it is.
Right, and I understand the need, Jennifer, to go to the horse show and the desire to go to the horse show. But as a newlywed, decently newlywed, shouldn't I, with the 90-year-old grandmother, shouldn't I be like the good wife? Or should I just do what I want to do, which is actually go to the horse show and not have to deal with the family at all?
Okay, but you're going to have this horse for a couple of years or 10 years or whatever, and you're going to have a good time and everything, and there's going to be lots more horse shows. You're going to have to live with this family forever.
Okay, thanks, Mom. I already heard that one. That's not what I want to hear. That's what I'm asking. We ask our friends for advice. We pick the friends that we think are going to give the answer we want. And you're not giving me the answer I want. Okay, so
besides,
let's put
San
this
Francisco,
on Facebook.
You can have a little fun while you're there. It's like, you know, you're not. It's not like going to be totally family. You guys can run off and have fun.
No, I was informed that it will be. Get to the airport Friday night, get in the car, drive the 2 hours to the middle of nowhere where they live, spend one evening with one set of grandparents. My husband is 37 years old, and all four of his grandparents are still alive. They're all in their 90s, except for the youngest one is turning 90 that weekend. So then it will be going from house to house.
Now I'm totally on the side of going visit the grandparents because – he has two sets of grandparents that are in their 90s. This guy is going to live forever. So you're going to have to be with him forever. I think the answer is right there.
He's going to remember forever is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. And the whole newlywed thing, you probably get away with that if you've been married a couple of years, but you're brand new.
I know. You're not getting
away. Besides, you're the life of the party. You should go. Liven it up a little.
No, I'm a wallflower when it comes to the family stuff. I just don't want anybody to not like me, so I just get quiet.
You never worry about that any place else.
I know, I don't care if you like me. You're stuck with me.
You don't worry about it here.
Oh, okay, well, I would hope our listeners weigh in on this. Go to the grandparents.
Enjoy the birthday party.
Fine. Whatever. Okay, so I'm done. I'm done venting. I'm done asking for your advice for anything. Thank you very much. I'm going to go watch French and Saunders over and over again and laugh.
Hey, I have one rescue story, and then we'll call it a day. This is from England again. We haven't had a rescue story yet this week. This was a little different because they had to go all out to save this pony. Poppy, a retired competition pony, yes, I said Poppy, fell into a privately owned pool, and after an afternoon of grazing in a garden nearby, apparently the pool had a cover on it, and Poppy decided that he could walk on that, and Poppy walked on it, and the whole thing fell down through, and Poppy was in the, Poppy's, get this, 12 hands, 48 inches high, and the pool was 5'6" deep where Poppy fell in. So, obviously, was over Poppy's head, and Poppy couldn't get herself out of the pool. So, the staff of this place held Poppy's head out of the water for 2 hours while the fire department came. They ended up having to drain the pool. Guess they didn't have one of those fancy winches things. They had to drain the pool, wait for the pool to drain, and then they built a whole ladder out of straw and stuff and managed to get Poppy out. Good news is Poppy is fine and went back to eating within 10 minutes because that's what a pony does. They don't care what happened 10 minutes ago. They're going to eat. So Poppy is okay. But they had to hold Poppy's head out of the water for 2 hours while this pool drained.
Wow. Wow. You know, the Native Americans would do that to break their horses. They would just ride them into the water, plunge them under, pull them up. So the pony should be good and broke. However, I would think it already was. How old was it? Like 35?
It was like 30 years old, too.
Oh, God,
old
it was already broke.
Pony.
Old pony. Oh, poor little Poppy. Hey, Poppy. Stuck
Poppy
in the
survived.
Pool.
Hey, we'll be back again tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. for another show. That's 9 a.m. Eastern. And we got lots planned for the rest of this week, so you want to stick with us for the rest of the week. And also all the other shows in the Horse Radio Network are starting to come out today. The Driving Radio Show will be out in a little while this morning because I'm just finishing up editing that, and that we did from the carriage auction. So we have lots of guests from the carriage auction. You'll want to take a listen to that. We also have the 79-year-old gentleman who spent a year making the chuck wagon. He was on the show with us as well. Very interesting guy. So that'll be at drivingradioshow.com a little bit later in the day. You can like us on Facebook. Just search for Driving Radio Show. That's it for today. Have a great day, everybody. We hope to see you again tomorrow.
All right, everybody, please remember to spay, neuter, and geld those ponies. Have a good one.
All right, we'll see you at Poppy's. Peelers.
Poor Poppy.